So welcome to Spotlight on Arts this week with John Costa and Rob Watson. How are you, Rob? Keeping well?
I'm very well, thank you, yes, as ever.
Yeah, sun's out for a change.
The sun is out and my mood has lifted.
All right, well, it's meant to be 16 degrees by the end of this week, so we're back to having a cold next week. When it goes down to 10, I'm sure that'll be great. You know what I mean?
We'll make the most of it while we can.
That's
our summer.
That's our summer, goodbye. Well,
remember 5 years ago when the pandemic hit around this time, we had a glorious March
that's right.
and April.
That's right.
And everybody kind of still talks about it, but so this might just be a way that that's kind of recurring occasionally.
Fingers crossed. So this week, our special guest is a good friend of mine. Can I call you my friend now?
Yeah, you lads do that.
This is Aaron Todd from Leicestershire Cares. But Aaron, how are you?
I'm well. Yeah, I'm doing all right. We're doing all right.
Thank you for coming and joining us.
You're welcome, man.
Now, obviously, we've known each other quite a while now, doing lots of youth-related stuff and coming down and supporting Leicestershire Cares, you know, being on the podcast with the young people and stuff.
Yeah,
we'll talk about all of that sort of stuff. But I really wanted to know how you first got into, or can you think of the very first time when you think to yourself you did something creative and someone said something positive to you about it? Was it music? Was it art? Was it drawing?
Probably drawing. You know, when I was little, I did a lot of drawing. I had two cousins. They were very skilled comic book drawers. I mean, they didn't do it for a living, but they were really good. Nice to copy them. They were older than me. So I started doing drawing. I got into a little bit of graffiti for a little bit. And I started doing bits of graffiti around the city where I was from, Coventry, and whatnot. So art. But then music, when I was probably about 14, I got interested in music. And then we started making it ourselves. And, you know, there was a guy who called Colin Bell, who kind of did youth work kind of stuff and projects in Coventry back in the 90s. And there was a studio there called the Depot Studios back of the theatre. Belgrade Theatre, it was called. And they used to let us use it, but only really late for free. So it was like 10 till 4 in the morning, and we were like 14, 15.
So that fitted perfectly your own sleep patterns, really.
Yeah. So we'd go there and learn about music and do stuff. So that was kind of like my first real... Taste of it.
Now, I mean, you work with a lot of young people now, and I know a lot of young people look to you as a mentor, probably sort of a bit loco parentis as well, and also probably some that you're a positive male figure. I won't call you a role model, I mean like a male figure that's talking about it. When you're talking to them about their creativity and stuff, did you have someone that said to you, Aaron, that's really, really good, you should carry on doing that, like on the art side, or was it more when you got into the music that really started to kind of hold your own?
But no one really said that to me. It was more of a thing where I kind of fell into it, because obviously, like, you know, a bit of the history we'll probably get into of me, you know, I came home from a long period of time of being away and just needed a new avenue to express myself in a positive way, because I couldn't keep doing what I was doing. And I've always loved music, I've always wrote music, you know, whether I'm good or not is irrelevant. It was about a release, so I used the music as a release to put my negative into a positive, use the music for my negativity to spew it out, and then I could be positive in the real world. And that's kind of when I got into it. And that's, you know, really got into it. I've been involved in music a long time, but obviously I spent a lot of time away. So it wasn't until I was like, you know, touching 30 that I really took it seriously and started to make music in that way. And then with that, it comes like, you know, it's expensive to create music and go studio. You know, nowadays you're talking, it's like £30 an hour. And... you know, unless I was on the wrong side of the tracks, I couldn't afford that. I was working at Asda at the time. You know, I was trying my best to keep my head above board and not slip back into old ways. So I couldn't afford to go to the studio, even though I wanted to. So I just brought... my missus had an old PC. I downloaded a crack copy of Cubase, a music program that I knew from my youth. I knew how to use. I brought a sound card, cheap one, like £100, cheap mic for about £30, and I started doing it at home, just to be creative and to cut corners, to save money. And I got quite good at producing and creating the music at home, and over time, my job improved, my finances improved. I could then buy better equipment for myself and do it for myself. And then, you get to a level where, okay, my music's good enough now to perform and to put out, and I would. But now I need music videos, I need photography, I need this, I need design. So I had to learn how to use Photoshop. I had to learn how to make videos, how to learn how to use cameras. So I started buying these bits, these equipment, and just doing it myself. And if I got stuck anywhere that I couldn't work out, just go on YouTube, and YouTube would tell you everything you need to know. And I just took it from there. So I started to create my own music, my own videos, everything, my own artwork, and just took it from there. It just escalated, and, you know, and I went, I've toured the world since, not the whole world, but parts of the world. I've covered everywhere in Britain that you can possibly do music. I've done it. And yeah, that's where I was at, and took a couple of years ago, and, you know, all the time working and whatnot.
What I like about that is that's probably about 3 or 4 minutes there, Rob, that could actually be played in schools, just to say to young people, one, that you can have a career in this thing, but not maybe the one that you think you're looking at on YouTube or Spotify, but also the fact that if you were to just like listen to some of that and do it, and seek out that local person like Aaron where you are, that you could do it. Okay, let's take a break.
Yeah.
So when you were about 14, 15, Aaron, you first started getting into music and stuff like that, did you ever consider that it could be something that you could make money at and have a career at, or were you just doing it as a way of filling your time?
We did it because it was cool. Like, you know, we were lost. At that age, we were very lost. We come, a lot of my people, my friends and stuff, we come from really bad broken homes and whatnot, and, you know, that's a podcast in itself. And we were just emulating what we seen on telly and trying to be like that, having fun with it, you know, trying to be little gangsters with it, you know, little gangster rappers, et cetera, et cetera. It was kind of just more fun. We didn't see nothing from it, really, you know. We didn't have, at that age...
Did you, like, egg each other on? Do you think you were kind of, like, supporting each other?
Yeah, we
in
were.
In that way that you do
we
when
were,
you're 14?
It was more about, we were more battling each other. So, but it's like, you know, iron sharpens iron. So it's like, or steel sharpens steel. Steel sharpens steel, right? So it was more, we were battling each other, but in a positive way. You know, we were trying to outdo each other and improve how he was lyrically, you know. So we kind of was supporting each other, but in a battling way, yeah.
Now, we're all over the age of 25. I always mention our age. It's quite good fun.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. but of course, back in the day, you're talking about there, like, you know, like not having the money to access studios. Yeah. And so you had to do it sort of, you know, late at night when someone was happy for you to have it. Yeah. Now, it seems to be, I mean, even this equipment we're sitting here now recording this podcast.
Everything's affordable.
Or what you were doing last night. We'll talk about Scrumptious, your new project last night in a little while. But, you know, you've got like, you know, Zooms, you've got the ability to get it. Even the stuff you can get on a smartphone now. Does it mean that it's actually more accessible?
Very.
Or does it make it harder now because it's almost you're doing it without realising you're being serious?
It has its ups and downs. It's like a double-edged sword, right? So it's like, yes, it's more accessible to do it. If you're motivated to create and be creative in 2025, the technology you need is affordable and accessible in so many places. There's really no excuses to be creative. On the flip side of it is, there's a lot of creatives. So it's harder to get your stuff to the wider audience. Like, you know, like going to the studio back in 1994, 95, it was reel to reel still, you know. ADATs were just coming out. There was no digital. You had to cut tape. So that's why it was more expensive and more harder to do, and you couldn't do it at home. Whereas now, for like less than 200 quid, you could probably buy a setup where you can record music. You could buy a camera.
Can I just move your phone?
Yeah, or you can buy you can buy a camera, cheap, decent 4K camera now, and that does the job. So it is more accessible, but the hard part is, once you've created it, that's the easy part. It's getting it out to a wider audience and all the other trim that come in. That's the harder part. It's a saturated market, which, I don't know, it's good for people that champion creatives because there's a lot more creatives around, you know. And, you know, I'll give you an example. When I first started doing the youth stuff with the kids, I was doing, I would call it multimedia sessions. and there wasn't much uptake. And I was like, what's going on here? Why is it? No, what's it? And it's just down to the word. As soon as I changed it to content creators, I was inundated with kids. Like, it's just the word, and you're like, it's the language that we speak to them is different to our language. So I just quickly learned, okay, what are they watching? What are they call? They call it content creators now. Cool. So that's what, we just changed the name to content creators, and off we sailed.
Do you find that when you're doing these sessions as well, you're kind of battling against whatever the latest trendy thing is that's online or an influencer's doing, and you're just like,
No, not really, because that. I don't really watch what they're doing, the influencers are doing online, because I find when I watch other people, or say I make rap music, right? So I don't listen to rap music, believe it or not, because I don't particularly like it. I listen to Tracy Chapman. I listen to Susan Vega. You know, I grew up on Joan Tradi, right? That's my mum's there. That's the music I listen to. That's the music that gives me comfort, right? But I like that.
That's a vehicle for you to...
Yeah, but I like the art form of rap. I like the delivery, but I don't particularly listen to it that much. So, yeah.
So, Aaron, bring us right up to date with, you know, what you're doing at the moment with Leicestershire Cares, and then maybe talk a little bit about the Scrumptious project.
Okay, so I've worked at Leicestershire Cares now, youth charity in Leicester and Leicestershire, Rutland, for 2 years. It's a good organisation. They care about the kids. They're very supportive of the things that I do. So the project that I work on is called Power to Change. It's about giving the people... the opportunity to change with tangible outcomes. So it's like the idea is we find and identify the issues you've got, you know, whether it's housing, whatever your issues are in life, we identify the issues and then we help you combat them issues, right? Or give you the tools you need to combat them issues. And then hopefully you've done it, right? You've combated the situation, you're okay, right? And then you become an empowered citizen. And then I like to do it where now them same young people now are paying it back again. So it just continues. So at some point I can step away and they can carry on. So bring up to Scrumptious yesterday, Sweet Shop in town. They approached me and said they love the stuff that I do with the content, the podcasting, the music, the videos, etc. How can they get involved? That's something that they're passionate about. They want to help their community too. So I said, well, before you go and do anything yourselves, let me come through Leicestershire Cares and we'll set up a content creator outreach group where we're offering, you know, housing support, education support, you know, we're doing housing, education, employability stuff. But at the same time, mixed in with that, we've got the content. We're going to do podcasting. We're going to do videos. We're going to do music. So young people have the opportunity to have the voice they need within the community, right? Because I always say this to them. I said, I'm 26 nearly, right? I'm 46 nearly, right? I'm living my future, right? So the future that's coming is yours. So in order for you to have a nice future, you first got to have a voice and have a say, and you've got to be heard. So that's what all this stuff's about. It's about giving you a voice to be heard, right? And it's, you know, and that's the main thing of what I like to do, give young people a voice so they can speak out and say what they got to say in the world. So Scrumptious yesterday, you know, we just went over there. We set up a podcast. We set up a bit of music to record. I printed off some posters. I went out into the street and, you know, any kids walking past, young guys, you know, I purposely went there while school was on, because the kids that are in school, they're generally, it's okay. It's the kids that are not in school, you know, so I've got to be there when they're there. I don't need the shirt and tie blazer kids. I need the kids that are in trouble, that are on the streets causing trouble, doing bad things.
Before 3 o'clock,
a little bit lost. So I can get them, and they're the ones I need to work with. So yesterday, that's what we did. We went out into the streets, and then, you know, we kind of winged it a little bit. There was a plan, but it was, you know, youth work is sometimes winging it.
Sometimes with youth work, the plan is be there.
Just be there, right, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, I took some, so when I talk about the power to change and paint it forward, so I took some of my youth that I've done a few things with. I think you've even done some stuff with them with the NHS stuff they did with you guys, Wahaj, Brandon. They came and they were not participating. They were my apprentices and they were doing so. I was kind of sitting back watching them, kind of proud like of what these guys are doing. Like these kids couldn't even talk to you before. Their heads down, they've got issues. Now they're out there talking to anybody, bringing them in, they're running the sessions. You know, they were doing, one was doing the podcasting, one was doing the music, one's out doing outreach. You know, I'm just having my coffee and facilitating them and making sure they're okay. And they killed it. They got like 15 young people, new faces, come and got involved. You know, three made songs. Some did a podcast. They all did a podcast in their own time. And yeah, they made songs. We found a great new singer girl called Lynette. So if Lynette's listening, big yourself up and, you know, you're going to be a star girl. I don't mean that. She's definitely going to be a star. And yeah, we just did the work. And that's what we do.
So you're listening to Spotlight on Arts with John Costa and Rob Watson. And we're here with our special guest this week, Aaron Todd, who's joined us from Leicestershire Cares. Now, Aaron, I'm going to tell you something now, and you react in whichever way you want. Okay, so I'm not going to ask you to share anything other than anything you're comfortable with. Yeah. So when I was in prison, yeah, mm-hmm. And got involved in working in the library for a while, yeah. And a lot of the stuff was around sort of storybook dads, like making book covers for your yeah. kids and all that sort of stuff. And since then, there've been storybook mums, there's been stuff yeah. done with the military, and that's all great. But a lot of the social, this was pre the internet as well. So a lot of the stuff was done on sort of, you know, Microsoft or Encarta and all this sort of stuff, all clip art and stuff. And a lot of it was about being creative. And it was amazing the amount of blokes that I came across that were creative when they were like teenagers or in primary school. And in fact, a lot of them, that was the last time yeah. someone said anything positive about
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Do you think that more could be done in those kind of environments where it's about using the technology? Like, say, for example, everything yes. you set up at Scrumptious yesterday, yes. there is no reason why that couldn't be set up inside
exactly. well,
any kind of institution. To say to people, it's about something that you're good at that just makes you proud about who yeah. you are no matter what you've done.
That changes you. Being proud changes, right? So, yeah, I agree with you 110 billion%, you know. I was in prison. The last time I was in prison was 12 years. I finished off in Garth, I finished off in Loudon Grange, which is in Nottinghamshire. And we always made music in prison. So we'd use, like, you know, two tape decks to create. One's got a mic, one's playing, record, etc. But Loudon Grange was a private run prison, and we managed to blag the education department to buy a MacBook because it had GarageBand on it. We managed to blag them to buy a sound card and a mic. And then we managed to blag them to give us two evenings a week in the education department for 2 hours each week, each time, so where we could go and create music. And that's exactly what we did. We would go there. I mean, we'd make beats in our cells on PlayStations, because obviously prisons change, you can have PlayStations now. So we'd make the beats in our cells on the PlayStations, take them to the education. I used to have a mini disc cassette player, and I'd put them on there, and then we'd go to the education and make music. So, but that started getting us to record all this stuff that we're talking about, all this street stuff, right? That's in our heads, in our hearts. It's been there for our, and we're grown men now, and we're all in the same situation, and we're spewing it out, but then we're taking it back to ourselves and listening to it. And that's where change starts to happen, because you start to feel a bit embarrassed about the stuff you're saying. Ooh, that's I can't send that to my mum. I can't, because you feel like a bit of a div. You know, because you're talking some tough stuff. It's like, oh, I'm like 28 now, I'm 30 now, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's like, so it was allowing people to spew that out and listen back to themselves and make corrections then. Then you can make corrections in reflection. So, and that's what we were doing. And so art in prison, I think, is key. Now, you're talking about like these podcast stuff that are in there. We're in the process, unless you cares, of doing that for real. Like, because yes, it's about having a voice, and the best way to have is to talk, get it off your chest, because we fester in prison, because you got to be hard. you got to be tough in there, because it's that environment. You have to be tough. You have to be a different person, because you got to survive. If you, you know yourself, you're vulnerable. You're going to get preyed upon, and it's that simple. So you got to have a certain level of bravado, so you don't never talk properly about your issues. So you never really deal with them, right? Podcasting, talking gives you the opportunity to do that, and when you're trying to reach people to change through conversation, especially a podcast, is the best tool in 2025 to make change with people. There is nothing better to be able to get information out of people through conversation. Like, you know, you can speak to a young person or a grown person that's in that mode, and they'll have their heads down their trousers, give you yeah, no, yeah, no. Stick the headphones on, let them hear themselves back while they're doing it. They'll tell you their life story and more. So, and then that's when change starts to happen, when you start communicating.
So Aaron, just picking up on that, I mean, I remember when I was inside, you know, having conversations with prison officers and people in the library as well, mm-hmm. the workers themselves, and having since been out speaking to probation officers and police officers talking about these kind of projects, there's always those that are convinced that these things are good because it gives people something to do. Yeah. Then there's those people that suddenly start getting the fact that actually, yeah, it's something to do, but it also gives you compliance in other ways, which is, you know, if you want 2 hours access on an evening to education to do this, then you kind of, you know, yeah. general behaviour and engagement with
to change.
It's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's those that are completely enlightened and turn around and realise that actually probably for the first time in any kind of educational environment, they're giving you some tools that you could actually use out in the real world, because yeah. you go out proud about what you do. And then I'm not saying you're going to go out and everyone's going to set up a studio, but no. you can do it. So how do we get that done out on the street, back into youth's work, which is, you know, underfunded, you know, underappreciated.
Just go and do it.
How do we do that?
We just go and do it. We just do it. Because, you know, I always look around, and it's very strange. I look around, you know, the city and the wider country, and I always hear people moaning about it. I see a lot of moaning, especially in Leicester, about they can't get young people to engage in their projects, right?
And they've got all the money.
And it's like, to me, that is the most strangest thing. I don't understand, because, like, there must be something about you then, because that's the easy part for me. I can go out in town now, and I can walk through town, and I have at least 10 kids following me coming to a session, and I find it, that's the easy part, you know. So the engaging of the young people is the easy part. It's the funding of it is the hard part. Making it sustainable is harder, because you need to have funding for it, right? But I think that's the easy part, you know. And when it comes to prisoners, it's we do ETS, enhanced thinking skills, anger management, these mundane, same old courses. We've got to make them change, think about their anger, think about this. And it's just a load of tick box questions. And that we, you know, I've done it too, right? When you go for parole, I've got to do all these courses to get parole. It's just jumping through hoops. There's no real change happening with these. And the people that are delivering them are all usually uni students doing their whatever it is, their degree, and this is what they need for it. And, you know, they're not real psychologists. They're not real psychiatrists. They're not really, they're just doing their uni stuff, right? Or they're doing criminology or something like that, right? So these courses don't never help you. They never help me. Anger management did not help me. Enhanced thinking skills did not help me. If anything, they make you better criminals, right? What does help is conversation through the art, expression, to be able to express. I've seen a new thing they started doing in schools. I've seen one school do it where they've got like these scream boxes, right? So they go in the box and they scream as loud as they can, and to get all their frustration out, it's got a meter, and you win prizes if you hit the top. Like, there's a hammer thing at the fair where you go ding, hit the bell. Same like that. Because it's just another way of getting that aggression, that anger out of you in a controlled and constructive way, you know. And conversation is the most powerful thing. Music is powerful, you know, to give change. And I just think, like, how do you engage? Just go and do it.
You mentioned being 46, yeah?
Yeah.
So if you were 16 now, today, in 2025, and you bimbled into your own project,
yeah,
would you be able to get through to you, or do you have to go through these things before you can do it?
I feel like, I see, lived experiences, you know, everyone's got to make their own mistakes, right? So that's a fact. But at the same time, you don't have to make, if I would have listened to me to a certain extent, right? You know, I probably would have made some of the same mistakes, but I would have been wiser about it or more aware, because my job is to make young people aware of my life and how to not end up doing the things that I did.
Because you're not there to tell people what to do.
Yeah, right? I'm making you aware.
Where some of your colleagues have misunderstand
I'm there to make you aware. These are the mistakes I made. This always bothers me. I don't know if it's because my missus thinks it's because I'm a narcissist, right? But I probably am. But I always say, she calls me a hypocrite as well, because I say, don't do what I do what I say, right? Learn from what I've done and failed at. Learn from my failures, not my successes. Like, don't do this because that'll put you in prison. That'll put you in pain. That'll get you stabbed. That'll get you jumped. That'll get you A, B, and C, right? Because I know, because I've done it. And it's not the way forward. If I could go back and do it again, I'd do it differently. But I can't. So I always say, learn from my mistakes.
Listen, Aaron, thanks very much. I mean, you were very honest, shot from the hip and that, which I knew exactly what you'd do. So it's brilliant. And of course, we could talk to you for like 4 hours. And probably, as you said, multiple podcasts here. But I know Rob's been furiously making some notes, which he rarely does, actually. So I knew that he'd want to ask something. Hopefully he can be concise with what he wants to ask you. But here we go.
It's this idea of creativity rather than logic.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that people ask people to consider as a logical thing.
Yeah.
What do you understand and what have you experienced about that creative moment? Can you describe a moment where you've realized that you've changed because you've made that creative connection for something? What was that like? Because the best way to explain it is to say how it worked for you. What was it you...
Well, I can go back to like the music, right? Maybe about when I was performing and the crowd reacted to that for the first time. That was a big moment for me. That's like, oh, this is good. So if I keep doing this, is this going to get better? And that was kind of the realization moment for me, to keep doing it. I mean...
But that's like an external validation for something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you were right
inside
then and you thought, okay, I'm nervous about this, but having that affirmation is really important. Yeah. But what was the moment when you kind of connected? Because what got you up on the stage?
My ego. That's the truth. It was my ego, you know. In order to be a musician, you have to be an egotistical maniac. It's that simple. You know, musicians, you have to be, because you have to stand out from the rest of the crowd. So I was never nervous about doing it. What moment did I can't put my finger on it. I mean,
Now, can I ask you, think that's because you think there wasn't a moment, or because you've not really thought of it from that perspective?
I've not really thought of it from that perspective, you know. I don't know off the top of my head. I mean,
as someone from the outside looking in, and what I know about you, but also I've been very fortunate to mention the NHS film where the young people were speaking off of camera between takes, and one person I can remember now, I'm not going to mention their name, but I remember them talking incredibly eloquently for at least 90 seconds, which I should imagine for this young person was quite a long time.
Yeah.
Unscripted, just told everybody in the studio the impact that you'd had on their life. Because you were just there and gave them permission to do it. Yeah. Honestly, I remember, even I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, because this is the thing. We talk about youth work as if it's something magical. And actually what it is, we've all got the ability to connect
everyone
with young
can
people,
do it.
But only if we put ourselves forward to share what we've gone through.
Exactly. That's the main thing. I think once with the young people, the relatability is key. You know, or just honesty is key, you know.
I think we need to change the language, because we've talked about this, you and I, John, for a long time, about permission. You don't need permission. And we're always saying we don't give people permission, but inspiring people. Now, I always find that really difficult to kind of say that you've actually inspired somebody to make that connection and shift their perspective.
Inspiring them. So it's just this, I think that's Eli. It's like, look, this is what we've got. You can do anything you want. Putting the power into their hands is the inspiration. It's like, this is the equipment. Anything you need to know about, all this equipment, all these programs, just ask me and I will show you, right? The ideas have to come from you, right? You have to, the ideas of the podcast have to come from you. The ideas from the videos have to come from you. It all has to be your ideas. And that giving them that power inspires them. Telling them they really have the power to create anything they want, whether it's a plasticine model, whether it's a splat paint on the floor, whatever it is, you have the power. That's what inspires them.
And of course,
my opinion anyway, that's my opinion.
Well, no, and the thing is, for me, my final comment really is the fact that I think that, you know, having struggled over many years to try and get funding for multiple projects, as Rob and I have for audio related projects,
yeah, it's hard.
Going there, it's hard because it's always about this is the newest thing we want to fund, and you turn around and go, well, actually, you've not finished funding the stuff that you should fund.
They never finish the work, do they? Yeah. The funders never, like the government funding, they never finish off the work. They all, you know, they get it so far, then they take the funding away or they switch to something else. They never finish it. It's like just fund it until it's, because these issues are going to be forever. And the way we live now with social media and mental health of young people through the social media, and they're confused. A lot of young people are confused. They just don't know where they're going because they're on TikTok, they're on Instagram, they're on Twitter, they're on all sorts of things. They're in the lives, they're going to college. They get confused with all this information they're getting. Half it's not real, half it's fake. It's a very confusing world. So they don't really get that, you know.
So all I can say to finish off, Aaron, is just on behalf of young people, keep doing what you do.
I'll try to. Hopefully, I will be able to.
And go home and say to your better half that we probably all agree with what she thinks about you, but at the same time, maybe she shouldn't give you such
too.
A hard time.
I agree too.
Cheers, Aaron.
Thank you. Thank you very much for letting me come in.